Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi, I'm Dr. Deborah.
Hi, I'm Coach Kelly.
And I'm so happy to see you again,
yes,
Kelly. You're always
you
the
too.
Highlight of my week.
Oh my God, ditto. Ditto.
Another glorious, beautiful day here in Southern California.
Always glorious for the most part. 99% of the time, I would say.
I would say sometimes that is a little bit boring. You know,
that's you
why.
Think so?
Well, because you live here, that's probably why. Yes, that's why I'm so eager
to experience.
Guess my next adventure will be to live in Santa Fe, New Mexico.
That'd be awesome.
But it's a long time coming, so I have to be patient. But it's fun
so
to
enjoy
go visit
the sunshine.
There. Absolutely, absolutely. Hey, so today we thought we would just have what we were calling the hodgepodge hour.
Yes.
At the end of last show, we were both like, what are we going to do next week? All right, we'll just do whatever. And it is you, the listener, who makes our show. So please give us a call at 323-203-0815. Again, 323-203-0815. Or email us anytime. I am really excited today. Some really cool things happened last
Tell
week.
Tell me.
Well, I have entered the wonderful world of blogging and social media.
Yes, I saw that. That's so great. How does it feel to be part of this century now?
Oh, my God. Exactly. I can't believe I resisted for so long.
I know.
It's really fun. So it's got, let's see, Twitter, Pinterest, Tumblr, Facebook, LinkedIn. I've got all of them, my website and blogging, which is really fun.
Oh, my God. And are you doing the same messages on each one or different, like, according or what?
I'm going to do the same. Right there, there's a company called, I think it's called Hootsuite, and it's basically a Grand Central Station.
You do your post, and then
it posts out to all those other things.
Yes.
I understand from people that doing social media stuff on a regular basis can be very time-consuming.
My God. Yes. Well, this is really smart. This company's brilliant, I think,
to do that.
And we get no kickbacks.
We're just saying. But if you'd like to sponsor our show, if somebody's listening.
Exactly.
Which, by the way, you and I are working on possibly
getting
heading out there. So if anybody who's listening, if you have an interest in sponsoring our show, please give us a call
or
give us an email, because that will be really fun. We'll highlight your name on air. And our listenership is growing, which is exciting.
It's huge.
Yeah.
I love it.
So lots of fun things. So how about you? How was your week? I know you're struggling with a couple of things.
Oh, my gosh. Should I go into my story now or later?
Actually,
or what?
I think that the dog story is really important. I mean, you know, we even did, you know, talk about pets one time and how much people love their pets.
Yes, exactly.
So tell the story. I think it's fabulous.
Okay.
If anybody wants to call in and weigh in on this.
Sure.
Kelly needs some good advice.
I really do.
We're going to turn the tables today.
Exactly. Give us the advice. Okay. So my babysitter comes last night and she leaves, says goodbye, and then she comes back into the house and she says, oh, hey, guys, two women approached me, police invests, security people, asking if two stray dogs were mine. And since I'm an animal lover and, you know, I know you two are also, they're not mine, but do you want to help find the owners? So, of course, my husband and I are like, absolutely, let's work this out, get these dogs back to their homes. So we go to a local rescue place where they can read to see if the dog has a microchip. So for those of you who don't know, a microchip is typically implanted in a dog and it has the dog's information. If something happens like this, the dog runs away or gets lost. And shelters have scanners that can read these microchips. So we bring it down to this rescue place. They read the microchip, give us the number and a piece of paper and say, okay, you know what? You're unfortunately, like, you're on your own at this point. Okay, great. So we go home, we take the dogs home, and we call the microchip companies. And dog number one has an owner that was maybe about 20 minutes away. So the microchip company alerted the owner and said, if this is, you know, your dog, call this number, which was my number. So the woman calls me and says, I think you have my dog. I said, oh my gosh. She said, you know, she described it perfectly, you know, as it's a Shih Tzu, it's, you know, black. And I said, yep, that's the dog. She said, you won't believe this, but a year ago, my dog was stolen. So I said, wow. Oh my gosh. She's like, I can't believe it. So we bring the dog to the owner. She's got three kids. She's so excited. This is a big reunion. Everybody's happy. So she tells me that she was looking for the dog, obviously, for a year, couldn't find it. So she gets a new dog. So now she has a new dog and this old dog. Meanwhile, after that happens, my neighbor calls me and says, hey, I'd put up a post on like our neighborhood listserv. So one of my neighbors calls me and says, hey, I saw your post about the two dogs. Well, my neighbor actually is upset because she lost her two dogs, and those were the exact description. So now I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, what do I do here? So we return dog number two to those neighbors. Well, she calls me today and basically, I'm sorry, she wasn't home, but her son was home. So the owner of the neighbor down the street from me calls me today and says, that was my dog. Like, what happened? And I said, look, I didn't know. All I knew was that the microchip number belonged to this owner and we returned it. And so now,
and the other dog did not have a microchip, is what?
It had a microchip, but it didn't match up with anything.
Okay.
So I was completely caught in the middle. And so my husband and I called the police and basically had all of us on three-way, because it's like my husband and I like want to exit out of this situation. Like, we're no longer like parts of this. Like, this is kind of, now you got to handle it on your own.
Well, you're being so helpful, but it's getting messy.
It's getting
right?
really and it's messy.
Sort of beyond
it's
your...
like, yeah, beyond my realm. Like, I don't know. I was just trying to be a good Samaritan and like do what's right. And so anyway, so yeah, so she's devastated. The neighbor who lives a couple doors down, because she is claiming that this is her dog. And so I don't know. It's a question of like what really happened. I mean, I do believe that the woman 20 minutes away, this really is her dog. She did file a police report a year ago. Everything kind of matches up. The microchip number, you know, matches up with her. And so it's like a question of like, well, what happened? Did somebody steal the dog and then give it away to this other neighbor, or who knows? I didn't want to get kind of too involved and ask the neighbor down the street, like,
how they acquired the dogs,
exactly.
Right?
So that's kind of the story. And I guess it's just a question of like, God, this brings up a lot, you know, ethics and boundaries and, you know, emotional feelings. It's a lot.
Of course. Obviously, the lady that acquired the first dog.
Yes.
Right?
The original owner?
Yeah, the original owner is so thrilled to have her pooch back.
Exactly.
But then if this other woman has been taking care of these two dogs together for the last year or year and a half, then obviously there's going to be a strong attachment there too.
Right.
So, you know, you didn't do anything wrong. You did everything right and very kind of you and sweet of you to do this. But I can see how it would cause such a
stir.
Just such
a turmoil.
Right?
I mean,
this is just so fascinating. If anybody has commentary on this, I mean, who does that dog belong to? Does the dog belong to its original owner, or is its new home that it's been living with
in the last year?
You know, like, is that right to not have that person have some claims on the dog too?
It's very
tough.
It's
a tough one.
It's very tough.
If you're listening and you understand this dilemma, please give us a call at 323-203-0815. We'd love to hear your opinion about this. Again, 323-203-0815. What is the next step then, as you see it? I mean, basically, it's in the hands of the police.
Yeah, so when we called the police,
said,
you know, please do not give any information out to the second owner about the first owner, because, you know, you don't want it to get messy and we don't know what could happen at this point. And they basically advised us that if the second owner calls us and kind of harasses us, that we just say, please file a police report. Like, it's out of our hands at this point. Mm-hmm. But I'm just uncomfortable because I don't want her having anger toward us because, you know, even though the dog slipped out, we didn't know, we didn't do it consciously. It's still like, you know, when you're angry and you're upset, you want to place blame.
Of course. Yes.
And I'm worried that that's going to be us. We live literally three houses down. I'm nervous and it's uncomfortable. And it's like, oh, it's just so hard. It's so hard. And it's like, it's very, very tough situation. In my opinion, I would love if both these women could work it out and they sort of have equal custody over this dog.
Oh,
do you know what I mean?
Sure.
And two nights of the week it spends at this place and, you know, three nights a week it spends at the other place. And I mean, that would be in an ideal world. But, you know, I mean, it just made me sad, I think, when I heard the original owner had the three kids, because I would think that, I mean, can you imagine, like, you're a little kid, old enough to understand what's going on, and your dog is stolen or missing, you think it's over. And then just sort of having that, you know, reunion with this dog that you've lost, like, it just, it really, you know, it touches my heart.
Of course. You know, if we can project here for a moment, also, I think maybe the bigger question is about what's really in the best interest of the dog.
I know.
You know, like, I know you're saying the custody and all that, but I don't know that dogs do so well with being
pulled over,
pulled back and forth.
Exactly.
Back and forth. They really do try to sort of like to nestle in with, you know, and really have that continuity of care.
Yes.
Like, children probably don't like it either, and we do that to them all the time.
Yes.
Also with divorces and stuff. But, I mean, it is kind of that age-old question of, you know, is the biological mother versus the adoptive mother?
Yes.
Who's got more rights and privileges to the child if they both want to have, you know, custody?
Sure.
So it is such a big dilemma. But I wonder where the dog, this dog... And you know more about this than, because I haven't really owned dogs for a long time. I've definitely been more of the cat person. But, you know, you saw that there was a connection between these two dogs, right?
That's what upset me so much.
So that's like, you know, separating out siblings who are in foster
care.
That
killed me. That killed me. And so, ugh, it's just horrible. It's such a horrible situation. I mean, I don't know what the right answer is. I mean, I can see... If this woman is not a criminal and really thinks that the second owner really thinks that, you know, this is her dog and got it as a gift or whatnot, then I can really see benefits to both. I can see bringing the dog back to her and having the dog back with its sister. But then I can also see, you know, benefits of the original owner whose dog, you know, that she purchased and was stolen off of her, you know, its property. It was stolen. She was probably devastated. She had formed a bond.
I know that earlier you had told me that you had somebody else deliver that dog to the... Did you get any report on the reunion itself?
Was
the dog really excited to see the...
Yes, the dog... She said that she pulled up and the dog is, like, flipping out and kind of recognized everything. And there was clearly a connection,
a memory
said.
And an attachment that was brought right back.
Yep. So it's a tough call, and I just...
Poor Kelly.
I'm feeling so uncomfortable.
You're such a sensitive and compassionate person that this has got to be just pulling at
your
heart.
It's killing me. It is killing me. So, yeah, but if you have any comments, please give us a call at 323-203-0815 or email us.
That's probably one of the hardest parts of the situation, too, is that it's so sad that you're actually having to deal with some activation of fear about how the neighbor woman may approach this, right?
Yes.
The idea that you're doing something, and this happened probably to all of us at some point in our lives, you're doing something nice, but somebody misperceives it or they're so unhappy with the outcome of something and, like you said, needing somebody to blame that it just becomes... just an outrage.
Completely. Well, that's what I'm worried about. Like, when you're so upset and so devastated, especially when you look at your dog, which I can relate to as a child in a way, you can become irrational. And it's
especially your dog came out of your vagina, you said.
100%. My only vaginal birth. And you get it. Now you understand. And I mean that. Like, people laugh and think it's, no, I'm serious. Like, it feels like a vaginal birth to me. All 43 pounds of him. I know, exactly. But I don't know. So that's what worries me, is when you become irrational and upset, so upset, you become desperate. Mm-hmm. And when you become desperate, you do desperate things. Mm-hmm. And I worry I'm going to get a bang on the door or even worse. Who knows? I don't know.
Do you have any information about whether this woman has a history of any sort of irrational acts in the neighborhood?
I don't. No, I don't. I don't have any information. Yeah, I mean... And I just feel bad. I mean, I hope. I mean, she does understand, but I really didn't know it was her dog. We literally just went straight to the microchip. That was, you know, what a normal person does. They go right to the microchip. They find the owner, and I thought, wow, he came a long way from Burbank. But you know, and he like ran. It was strange, but it was like, all right, well, you know, makes sense. So,
and not to be insensitive to the woman who's.
The second
your neighbor
yeah.
is, but I mean, and I guess she could have at one point when she got the dogs made sure that both of them had microchips.
Absolutely.
And at very least, originally she would have discovered that one of the dogs
belongs to
somebody else,
totally.
And could have actually saved a lot of that.
Exactly.
Right. So I mean, some level of responsibility also falls on her for having not registered both dogs or discovered. in registering them that,
yes,
you know, that she would be not doing the right thing to keep the dog to begin with.
Exactly. Well, I was saying the dogs typically found in shelters, the first thing that they do is check their microchips. Mm. So this dog didn't go to a shelter and didn't come from a rescue or a shelter. It came from sort of, you know, the black market. Who knows? But, yeah. So
it's really interesting, and I not that you should get involved in this, to find out more from woman number one, who uh-huh. you returned the first dog to.
Yeah.
You know, when she says stolen, uh-huh. you know, what were the actual circumstances of that?
Right. That I don't know. I don't know. I mean, she said her whole place was gated, so it wasn't like the dog escaped. And so I don't know if she had mentioned a gardener or something that had taken the dog. Mm-hmm. She's not quite sure. But she did report it mm-hmm. a year ago. So,
right.
you know, so that's where I feel like, okay, that adds up, you know? And then it's just sort of strange, but I'm more curious about the second owner, how it came in contact with this dog. That's what I want to know. Like, mm-hmm. how did you, and I didn't want to get involved with that on the phone with her, but I was so curious. It's like, how did you acquire this dog? Like, how did it come to you?
The one that was stolen.
Yeah.
Right.
That's
was the other one stolen also, and they were delivered to her as a team.
Right.
Right? We don't know.
Exactly. We don't know.
Interesting. Very interesting.
Very interesting.
I once ended up with an adopted cat named Baxter, who was declawed.
Okay.
It turned out to be about 9 years old. There's no way he could have climbed the fence to get into my backyard.
Oh.
But somehow he landed in my backyard about 2 months after one of my most beloved cats had passed away of a stroke, which was so sad.
Oh.
And this cat that looked just like the other cat shows up in the backyard.
No.
My daughter's like, Mommy, we have to keep the kitty. I'm like, I don't know, honey. It's not our cat.
Right.
This obviously was a well taken care of cat. We have to find the owners. We went all through the neighborhood, every place we could think of. And at this time, there wasn't as much access like on the internet to be posting this and posting that to help find. So we put posters up everywhere. The next morning, all the posters were gone. We did not take them down. It was almost as if nobody wanted this cat found. Like somebody had moved or abandoned this cat, knew that maybe I was a total cat lover.
Exactly.
Right?
And said,
well,
I'll deliver it here.
Yeah.
Wow. How long did that cat live?
Had him for another 5 years.
Aww.
You know, he's turned out to be a little bit of a sad situation because I still had my other cat who was the brother of the one that had passed, who ended up living another 3 years till 21 years old.
Oh,
that
wow.
was Mr. Hyde out of Dr. Jekyll and
so
Mr.
cute.
Hyde. But Baxter apparently was only a one cat show. He did not like other cats or sharing things. So he literally, I would leave the room and he would be sitting on the other cat, like attempting to kill the poor little guy.
My God.
So I had to sequester them. And he got along with the bunny. Loved the bunny.
Oh, that's
but
funny.
Not the cat. There was
wow.
no alpha territorial with the bunny.
So what did you do? Just close the doors?
I actually found it. I had moved in the process and so I had another space for Baxter to kind of hang out. It was his own little territory.
Uh-huh.
And he was too kind of old and chunky at that point to jump over kitty,
right.
what do they call the child protective
gates.
Yeah. So he was a riot, though. I mean, he had quite the personality.
Aww.
We called him Baxter Belly Boy because when he walked, his belly would swing from side to side.
So cute.
He was awfully cute, but
that's tough. Oh,
but then once the other cat passed, then he was okay.
Exactly.
But it was a couple years. It was tough. I mean, he ruined all my furniture. Oh. These beautiful leather couches that my parents had given to me. Peed all over them, just marking.
Wow.
Oh, he was a bugger.
Well, I wonder if he behaved this way in the other homes. And that's why, you know what I mean?
Doubt
but
it.
How sweet are you to take him in regardless and see his heart and, you know.
He was sweet at the core, but definitely competitive and territorial. Well, anyway, please keep me posted on what happens with this outcome. I know this. You're going to be twittering about this for a long time.
Yes, exactly.
Do you see this neighbor often, like in walks?
Not so often. But like, I don't even think she lives there. It's sort of a interesting story. So I don't even know if she lives there, but her sister might. And so I don't know if she's going to be there all the time, but I think those are her dogs. So, or were her dogs, who knows? But yeah, so we'll see.
Wow. All right. So keep us posted on that one.
Yes.
And please, if you have some thoughts or feelings or comments about this or anything else that's on your mind, this is the Hodgepodge Hour today.
Yes.
It is our temporary title for today's show. We're calling it Hodgepodge. And call us at 323-203-0815. 323-203-0815. So I want to run something by you, Kelly. This was like one of those moments. You know, one of the things that's great about doing this show is that where I used to have like fleeting thoughts about things and go, oh, that's just a fleeting thought. Now when I have a fleeting thought, I go, oh, that'd be really interesting to actually talk about, right?
Yeah.
So the other day, Christopher and I were just meandering around, and there's this very fancy health food market that's not too far from our house. I think there's only two in Los Angeles. It's not a big chain like Whole Foods or anything like that, but it's definitely one of those up and coming ones.
Yeah.
I think it's called Erewhon.
And, Erewhon's a very good market.
Okay, yeah. So beautiful. Like, yeah. Everything about it is perfect. They're giving away samples of sushi. I mean, right? He's like, would you like another? Sure.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
Another? Sure.
Yeah.
So anyway, in the store, this is the irony of it. It was one of that's those funny. Moments. It was like, this is just so Los Angeles, right? So walking down the aisles, and it's really pretty. And then all of a sudden, I don't know if this woman is listening. She won't know who I'm talking about. She's walking down the aisle, and I'm telling you, everything about this woman was plastic surgery.
Oh,
I mean, all the way down to probably her toenails.
Really?
Right? I mean, to the face, you could tell that probably
Botox and all that stuff.
She was probably, I mean, she was an attractive woman, actually, but she looked so unattractive by this time because there was nothing that looked genuinely nice about her. So you have this imagery, right? She's got her little basket. She's walking down the fresh spices and the fresh vitamins and all this stuff. And you're like, I don't think vitamins penetrate plastic. I really don't. I don't think that they do any good for
it. So it's just like a funny image. But I feel like that is the quintessential LA. It's like, you know, it's like sort of, you know, everything kind of fake, but then it's like they want the organic and real and gluten-free. You know what I mean? It's like it's like I'll take poison in my face, a horse tranquilizer, you know, in my face, but like gluten, no way. You know? It's like it's so funny.
This gluten thing really, I mean, it's gotten out of hand.
Oh my
God,
it's huge.
Really, what I'm understanding about it is not that, you know, it's great to eat tons of gluten.
Right.
But the whole gluten thing was about from people with celiac disease.
Oh, sure.
Because they can't, they're actually like allergic to it.
Can't digest it.
Can't digest it. But your average human body can digest it. It's not. So, but the marketing and the packaging of the stuff now, you just put you know, gluten-free, non-GMOs. There's many things that don't have GMOs.
I know.
They can't have GMOs.
Exactly.
They have nothing to do with.
But it looks good on the label.
It looks good on the
label.
But
I feel like gluten-free is the fat-free of the 80s.
Yes.
You know, 90s, whatever. It's like, yeah. So I don't know. I think there's just a school out there that really believes that, you know, we should eat like our ancestors, and they didn't have grains. So that's sort of this whole paleo diet and that kind of thing. And so that's, and then you kind of glump in the gluten-free. So.
Well, it's fascinating because I read this book called Wheat Belly a while back.
Oh, yes. I read that.
Okay. Uh-huh. And it was interesting because I was thinking, okay, so, all right, well, you know, you can to limit the wheat, right? But you have to get many of your carbohydrates from other healthy grains like rice and, you know, especially brown rice and such, right? Well, in the fine print about, I don't know if you remember this, about two-thirds through the book, by the way, none of those things are really good for you. The whole basis of the book, when you really think about it, was knock out those carbohydrates.
In
knock
general.
Out those types of carbohydrates. Yeah. And it really goes back to lots of fresh fruits and vegetables, mostly vegetables, lots of proteins, limit, you know, the good to the good fats and, you know, less on the carbohydrates. So this whole game about, okay, so no wheat, but we've got the rice pasta and the corn pasta and all these things.
Sure.
I mean, in the end, I think the body kind of processes it pretty similarly. You know, I'm not a health and nutrition expert in that way.
Exactly.
But it was a fascinating moment that I was like, and then I felt terrible because I kept wanting to stare at this woman. there was a point at which I wanted to walk up to her and say, do you not understand the contradiction that you are creating
right
now in this life of yours, right? I didn't. I kept my mouth shut. But I wanted
really
to.
Interesting.
It made for good conversation the
afternoon. I don't know if you ever saw that show about the plastic surgery. It's so interesting. It's called Botched.
Oh, I've heard of it. I have not seen it.
So it's two surgeons who are in LA, and people come to these doctors when they've had really botched surgeries. So a lot of these people go to Tijuana and get like tummy tucks. One lady got a tummy tuck and literally, I'm not even joking, her vagina was like up to her belly button.
Oh my.
She was like, this needs to be fixed. And he was like, okay, well, where'd you go? And she was like, well, I went to Mexico. And he was like, you know, kind of questionable. And she's like, yeah, I kind of should have known when, you know, they said it was time to numb me and they just give me an ice pack to put on my stomach.
Oh my.
Yep.
That's frightening.
Frightening. So scary. And she was like, you know, I guess I just got suckered in with the money. She's like, my mom thought it was a good deal. So, you know, I thought, okay, great. I could save, you know, $1,200 and, you know, or however much, I can't remember. But, you know, get this procedure for, you know, so cheap and then have my stomach be flat. But meanwhile, wow. They just, you know, I mean, a lot of these doctors aren't even board certified.
It's frightening. You know, it's amazing also, that brings us to a slightly different twist on this, how much people will want to save money on certain things, and yet they'll just overspend on other things. I mean, I've had people literally, like, wither me down on my fee in private practice. You know, like, oh, I can't afford that, but I heard some good things about you. I want to come see you. And I'll finally, like, okay, look, all right, fine. And we'll negotiate. Right. We'll go to something that's affordable. The next time they come in with the new Louis Vuitton bag.
Exactly.
I've noticed that the car that they're driving is you know, the new, brand new Mercedes. Mm-hmm. Like, my fee doesn't even come close to the cost of a Mercedes.
What do you do in that case? Talk about boundaries and ethics and things like that. You know, do you say something?
Really,
do you?
Yeah, it really depends on the person. I mean, sometimes I think that people just don't understand the value of certain things, or, you know, they just don't think of it. They have a short term sight on something, like, oh, the car's going to last me 3 years, but I've already spent that money, or it's already worked into the budget. I didn't have therapy worked into my budget, so therefore, you know, that extra cost every month doesn't fit my lifestyle. But so I'll talk to people about, you know, longer term, if they're going to stay in therapy, that, you know, we really have to define what the value is for them, and, you know, that I'm not really comfortable. It feels like a little bit that I'm being taken advantage of, because this is how I make a living, even though I do want to help people, same as you, but it's part of, you know, we do this, but we're not really doing anything else. Like, we're doing the radio show, which is a gift from our hearts to help inform people about things that we think are important in life anyway. And so, you know, we try to give back pro bono in different ways, but when I see that somebody can afford way better bags and trips and cars than I can,
then you get a little worried.
I get a little bit resentful,
of course,
which then doesn't make for good therapy either.
Yes, exactly. So. Sure. Well, I think you're right. I mean, I think people place different value on different things, and I also think it's like, look, they can't really barter down on a Louis Vuitton. Vuitton bag, but they can barter down with you. It's like, oh, well, you know, that's negotiable. So I wonder if they're sort of like, well, what's, you know, I don't know. And then
my dad, however, is probably one of the first all-time human beings on the planet who actually bartered for a dress, for not bartered, but bargained a dress down at Bullock's, which is now, I guess, Bloomingdale's,
oh,
the
sure.
old Bullock's, was one of the nicer department stores. My mother, I guess, fell in love with the one of those designer dresses. He pulls out a wad of cash and says, this is what I could pay for it.
Oh,
and they
God.
Literally
they did
took it.
It.
Yeah, he
That's
literally
so nice.
Bargained with corporate America.
Isn't that great?
It's hysterical.
Yeah, I feel like that wouldn't fly today.
I don't think so.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think you'd get even close to the right people where you could actually do that. You know, maybe at that time, you know, there was a manager that had enough power to be able to make those decisions or something. Maybe they had wiggle room. I don't know. It was hysterical. But it was like he walked in like he was buying a car.
Sure.
You know, it's like,
yeah, exactly.
That's not the right price. This
yeah,
is what
exactly.
I'll
do. Sure.
Hysterical.
Yeah.
Hysterical. But back to plastic surgery and people, you know, not getting good care on that. And by the way, I don't want to sound on air like I'm against plastic surgery. I know that people sometimes, you know, for their self-image, will do certain things because it really does make them feel better.
Sure.
I think the limit, though, is on how much are you doing to try to correct something that's really going on internally by focusing on the external. And that's kind of where I draw the line on that one.
Yes. No, I agree. And I think
my voice just got really deep. Did you hear that? I'm not sure what that's about. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, and also I think what's a little red flaggy is multiple plastic surgeries. So there's like that addict personality that's like, oh, if one more can fix me, you know, and it's like they daydream and obsess over the next surgery. And it's like a project, you know, it's like research. And, you know, back to the show again, there was this guy on there who literally, I mean, he spent his days like researching. He wanted big muscles and he got implants. And so he would spend months researching the, you know, he actually put one in himself.
Oh my.
And sort of, learning how to do it and what materials to use and where the muscle
is. Implant in his muscles
himself?
He put
an implant in himself.
So he surgically opened himself?
Surgically opened. I mean, he researched it. It was like a PhD, you know, and it was like, so that's what scares me is when sort of these obsessions get full blown and it's like, all right, what's really going on underneath? Because it's not about you having bigger muscles and fantasizing about the next, you know, leg implant.
Oh, just oh my goodness, that's just, it is unconscionable also for certain plastic surgeons to not direct some of the attention back to their potential patients to have some psychological interaction with them to understand what the meaning is of this, or to actually draw some limits and say, you know what, you've already had 4 facelifts and you're only 60.
Yeah,
you are going to look like this, like really show people what you will look like over time if you continue to do this, because I mean, it just doesn't look good
it
when
doesn't.
It's so unnatural. In my opinion.
I 100% agree. I 100% agree. But I do want to reach out to those who maybe feel, I mean, if there is something that does bother you and you think about it constantly, I mean, I am for changing yourself to make you feel better. If you, you know, there is a legitimate reason and, you know, and that's, you can kind of pare it down, you know, to one thing that's really upsetting you, and you feel better if you make the change. And so, I mean, you know, because it's like, why also live in misery? If you hate your nose, you know, you grow up, you've always hated it, you know, you want to make a change. And then, you know, I do see value in feeling better, feeling more self-confident, you know, that kind of thing.
And there's also certain conditions, you know, that just do affect people's ability to maintain functionality. For instance, you know, droopy eyelids when mm-hmm. they go so far down, or
yes.
they puff up so much, then it can affect eyesight.
Yes.
Or it can affect the feeling inside the mm-hmm. eye because it doesn't feel like it matches up correctly. You know, you get really dry eyes and stuff because the body's changing. And then certain things that, I mean, let's face it, we all do get older and our bodies don't cooperate as much as we would like them to. So the old 50 sit-ups that gave you a six-pack, now you have to do 550 to give you a six-pack. And if you had a baby and you couldn't lose the weight, yada, 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 metabolism, et cetera, and you do all the things that you can do naturally, but you want a little help, I think that that's, you know, usually pretty legitimate, as opposed to somebody who says, hey, I put on 20 pounds. I don't feel like going to lose it, or I don't feel like exercises. I think I'll just go
liposuction,
cut it off.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, I think that's...
I mean, I think that's the one field where I feel like doctors are a little bit more strict about, well, have you tried losing the weight? Mm. Have you? Because I think they see that the resurgence rate, you know, if they haven't tried to lose it and then, you know, they keep eating and then they gain it back and then they go back to the doctor, they're like, look, it hasn't gone. It's like, well, look, I told you, like, if you're, you know, you got to keep it off, you got to exercise, you know, that kind of thing.
But you still have to have a certain lifestyle to be able to get the benefits of some of those procedures.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, yeah, moving on from that, more hodgepodge. We started the show on our tweet today with basically, you know, what worries you.
Sure.
Right. And we want to talk about some of those things. So give us a call at 323-203-0815, 323-203-0815, or email us. You are listening to Dr. Deborah and Coach Kelly on today's show, but we're doing a hodgepodge. We also have bunches of
emails
too. So, but I wanted to talk about, you know, what's your experience around this time of year with taxes?
So funny. I just started them yesterday mm-hmm. to kind of get the ball rolling. I'm the type, I've always been the type. One time a friend said to me, you're like the extra credit girl. Like, you always do more. And it's because it's like, I like getting things over with. It's not that I'm like this overachiever. It's like that I just can't stand it like hanging over my head. That's just me. So now the taxes are approaching, I just want it done so I can sort of put it away. I can move on. But, you know, a lot of people work really well under the pressure. And so mm-hmm. it's like they need that deadline that it is due April 15th. Like, you better move your ass, you know, and that's when they kind of kick themselves in gear. But I'm kind of the opposite. What are your thoughts?
You know, I'm kind of like you too. I like to get it over with. And having a corporation as well, I actually have to get those in by March 15th.
Oh.
And then personal is by
really?
April 15th.
Okay.
So I'm actually working on them well before most people are for that piece. Mm-hmm. And since I'm sort of a one-person show in my corporation, it's kind of all me.
Sure.
But, so by the time March, like, 10th or 12th comes around, I've already done a lot. And I don't want to have to go back and do it, but I'll just keep plugging forward. But, you know, I find so many people these days have a pretty nonchalant attitude about it, and they just file extensions.
Oh, really?
Extension after extension after extension. So, you know, some people are doing their taxes from 2013 at the end of 2015.
No.
Yeah, it's amazing. So many people, even some of my colleagues, I'm like, oh, so are you doing taxes?
Yeah.
Yeah, just file an extension. I don't know. That would make me so nervous.
So nervous. But it sounds like they grant them pretty
loosely. Freely. Yeah.
Wow.
Definitely.
I wonder. I would think that there had to be a really special circumstance to qualify.
But then you know, so if you do that year after year, you're still doing taxes every year.
Exactly.
You're just not doing them in April.
Just,
right?
This is such a good point we talked about. Like, this is just an avoidance that you're just at some point going to have to take care of. So why just not do it? I mean, I understand once in a while these things happen. You had a rough year. who knows, but all the time that can get into an ugly habit.
You know what? And that's exactly what it becomes, I think. People go, okay, well, I just finished them in October. I don't want to do them again in April. So I'll wait. I'll file another extension. So now I've just shifted. I'm still doing taxes once a year, but I'm shifting it for a year. So I just thought that was interesting. You know, I was also going to ask you, what do you think about, you know, the question of, you know, what do we worry about? Do our worries change as we age? Do our worries change? Yeah, I mean, what are the things that you used to worry about when you were 10 versus...
Right. Well, here's what I can say, and I feel like you'll probably agree with this. The feeling is the same no matter the topic. Like, I remember when I was a teenager and getting, you know, depressed or upset about... It was typically about a boy. What else is new? You know, a boy didn't like me. I liked him. And but that feeling is the same... Oftentimes, like, you know, just changing the circumstances, you know, 20 years later. But I think, so I feel like as far as worry goes, again, it's like I remember worrying about things like colleges. And I remember once I mean, going abroad, I was studying in Paris and I had to sublet my apartment. Mm. I went to University of Florida, so I had to sublet my apartment in Gainesville and I could not find a subletter.
Oh, dear.
And I was like, I'm not going to be able to pay both rents, you know, in Paris and in Gainesville. And I couldn't find, I remember worrying so much about it. And my roommate at the time was like, don't worry about it. You know, and I was like, well, it's easy for you to say, you don't have to worry about it. But I remember just that feeling. And so it's like, here I am even later. And it's like, you know, it's just different circumstances. But yeah, I mean, I think obviously things change and, you know, things are more important to worry about, but it's all relative, you know, like the feeling is the same.
You know, let's make a really good point, because anxiety is anxiety. It's the perception of danger when there is none in the moment, but then it's what we project onto that moment in time that our bodies feel that fear. And I can totally relate to what you're saying. It's like if you're worried about something, no matter how trivial it may be in somebody else's mind, your body is reacting as if you're in danger.
Absolutely.
Right? But I've learned that one of the best ways out of worry is worry doesn't really get you anything.
Yes.
Right? It just doesn't change the problem. So action is what actually changes the event.
Yes.
So if you are worried about something, ask yourself, are there places where you have control that you're not asserting your level of power and you're continuing then to render yourself powerless? And then, of course, the worry magnifies.
Yes.
Which is a vicious cycle and so hard to get out of that once our bodies are revved up that way. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's really, really tough.
Well, I think worrying is sort of this illusion of control. And they say it's like a rocking chair. It's like you're doing something, but you're not getting anywhere. You know, so it's like you think in your mind, like, oh, well, I'm sort of doing something because I'm worrying. But it's not. It actually just takes you out of the present moment even more, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you worried about boys when you were younger. What did I worry about? I think I worried a lot about getting in trouble. I hated that feeling of somebody thinking I did something wrong, because I think I felt kind of misunderstood a lot and sort of misblamed, I guess. That's not really the word, but like projected upon that I had done things that, I mean, my sister, bless her, she's just a great little manipulator as a child. You know, I guess we all are, right? Yeah. All children learn how to manipulate in their own ways. And she was a very outspoken and found a way to get her way about everything. And like we would make agreements. Like she was a biter and I was a scratcher. So she was angry with me. She'd bite me.
Oh.
And then to protect myself, I would scratch her. Yeah. So we would make these agreements that we were not going to show our parents our damage.
Wow.
And she'd waltz downstairs at dinner and go, look what Debbie did to me. Look what Debbie did to me. And then by then, it was like, I didn't even get to show like what she had done to me. I'm already in trouble.
Okay, this is amazing. I have to stop you because this reminds me of my brother. And I need to tell you a story when you're finished.
Okay, so I would get in trouble because I would be like crying, saying, no.
But it was too late.
It's too late.
It's too late. So funny, like how like you kind of held to your guns and you would have, you know, gone with the rule, the promise that you guys had made. And similar story happened to my brother and I. This amazes me. So we had a house cleaner who we loved. His name was Tony, nicest guy on the planet. And one day my brother and I are playing Super Mario Brothers. And we're playing on the little, you know, control. This is like 1989, I want to say. And my brother, I don't know what happened. Either I won, something happened, and my brother got really angry and pushed me into my mom's wall unit that was glass.
Oh, no.
Totally broke. And
did you get hurt?
So I didn't get hurt. But the bottom of the wall unit had broke and shattered. So Tony had come in and kind of see what happened and asked, you know, if we were okay. And we're like, you know, scared out of our mind. Yes, you know. And he says, don't worry. I'll just tell your parents that I did it when I was cleaning.
Wow.
So of course I was like, oh, no, you can't. My brother was like, okay, no problem. Like, see ya. You know, peace out, dude. So he's totally fine with it. Feels no remorse. I'm like, so guilty.
Sweating in your pants.
That day, I went to see the movie Three Men and a Baby with one of my good friends, and I could not eat. I couldn't eat a thing. My mom's like, what's the matter? I couldn't eat. I felt so much
guilt.
And so I was like, Mom, I have to tell you something. And she's like, what's wrong? I'm like, you know, my Scott and I were playing on the Nintendo, and he threw me into the wall unit, and it broke, and Tony took the blame. She was so upset. She was like, I would take you home right now, but I'm treating your friend to the movie so you can watch the movie, which of course was so not enjoyable because I'm like terrified of the punishment I'm going to get after the movie. But she did say, she was like, well, because you were honest about it, you'll get less of a punishment than your brother. But my brother to this day probably would have never said anything.
No.
And it's so interesting.
He must have been so mad at you for...
He was so mad at me. And it was just like, it's so interesting how certain people, like, they can just sort of avoid and kind of what we were talking about earlier. But it is funny how, you know, siblings just torment each other and
it's hard.
And I see with my kids, you know, the manipulation, everything.
So it's funny, too, because I would say that even just when I think about that, I do still have some of that worry in life about getting in trouble. Like,
oh, you do? Know,
I do. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just a sort of a carryover from childhood. And
yeah.
But I don't worry about things as much as I used to.
Sure.
Like, hardly. I mean, I really do try to adopt the philosophy of, should that occur, I will handle it. It might occur. It's going to occur.
Yes.
What if it occurs? I just go,
sure.
Well, heard that in an anxiety seminar once, that this little guy who's about 75 years old, he was a heart surgeon, and he got into treating anxiety because he suffered such terrible anxiety. And he was like this renowned heart surgeon, like really, and he's like 5'2". He comes running on the stage, and he's got this paper bag that's made into like a monster, and he goes, this is anxiety. It's the boo. The boo is the what if that gnaws in your head.
Sure.
And if the best answer to the boo of the what if is what else, and should that occur, I'll handle it.
Yes.
You know, and take action along the way to try to prevent that occur should it be something that you fear or that would actually be disruptive in your life. So it was like one of those simple moments, like, I could do that.
It rationally makes sense.
It makes sense.
Of course, I agree with you 100%. I've definitely become more relaxed over the years and laid back, and thank God. And I think you sort of realize, I guess, you know, with time that, yeah, there's certain things, like you said, that are just out of your control and you really can't do. And it's also just about surrendering and accepting. It's like, okay, this is, you know, this may happen and that's okay, and I'll deal with it. But it is paralyzing a lot of times. You know, when you have that fear, it can be very paralyzing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Hey, you know what? We have time for one email.
Okay.
Let's do that. I'm going to actually jump down to the last one because I think that's pretty good for that today, because I want to have enough time to talk about our exciting show for next week.
Oh, yes. So God. We need to talk about that.
Yes. Okay. So I'm going to read this one.
Okay.
Okay. Dear Dr. Deborah and Coach Kelly, I really like my alone time, and my husband hates it when I go off and do things without him. We both work, so in fairness to him, we don't have that much free time to spend together. Yet for me, it's much better to have less time as long as it's quality time and still spend time on my own. It's not like I'm off doing anything threatening. Rather, I just like to have time to think without noise from other people. My job is very taxing and requires me to put a lot of effort into making other people feel good, whereas he spends most of his day-to-day at work behind closed doors on a computer. He keeps accusing me of not loving him enough, and that's not true, but I'm growing less attracted to him because he seems so needy. Should I force myself to spend more time with him, or should I just tell him to grow up and be a man? Signed, Rock and a Hard Place.
Very interesting.
A lot of couples deal with those kinds of issues.
Yeah.
You know, the differences of people on that continuum of contact versus separateness.
Yes.
You know, it's like, it's not that one is better than the other. Human beings need
both,
but we seem to grow up being either more afraid of one than the other. So people who are contact junkies, as I call them, which I certainly was a former contact junkie, you know, just feeling, needing to have that constant reassurance by the person that I love that everything's okay. They're right there for me and we do everything together. And you know, that's sort of pure codependency.
Sure.
Afraid to acknowledge acknowledge that I had my own needs for separateness mm-hmm. also, and that that was okay, and that didn't have to be threatening.
Yes.
So I had zero tolerance for anybody who wanted to spend a minute away yeah. from me. And yeah. now I actually feel a little bit more smothered if I don't have enough alone time.
Sure.
So I have to say that Christopher is probably the first best match for me in terms of both of us seem to have a, a strong amount of contact, but we also really do enjoy and can be comfortable and trusting in our separate alone. Time. Mm-hmm. So that's a rock and a hard place. You are not alone.
Exactly.
But I would say that there's more than the two choices of should I just tell him to grow up and be a man, or should I force myself to spend more time with him?
Right.
I think that having an ongoing dialogue about what that really means to her about her separate time, so that she can present it in a way that isn't threatening or isn't accusing him of being too needy, because you know what? Who's to say that he's being too needy if he wants to spend time with
exactly.
her? Right?
Sure.
I mean, that's his level of contact. But to make that separateness something that feels less threatening to him.
Well, it sounds like, too, I wonder if there's an insecurity on his part that kind of needs to be talked about. You know, I don't know. Just saying, maybe dig a little bit deeper. And it's like, you know, I just want to make sure. Are you feeling that, you know, I'm not there for you in other ways? Or are you worried about our relationship? Or you just genuinely want to spend time with me more? So I think this is, you know, can open up that conversation as well.
And also, I think maybe looking into his own background and his own role models from his family of origin, you know, did his parents spend just all their all their time together? Because, I mean, obviously, these two, it says that they both work and have very busy lives. So they are spending a fair amount of time, I'm going to gather, not with each other. So he may see that as, okay, but so to nourish and nurture our relationship, then we should be doing more of these things together. We also don't know just how much alone time she wants.
Right.
Like when she says, I'd rather have quality time, but still spend time on her own.
Exactly.
One thing that I found that often works in relationships is to have what the couple will call sacred time together.
Okay.
So that that is a time that no matter what, the other person doesn't break that. It's like they're it's even more than a date night, because this is our time to nourish our relationship. Now, whether you design that each week, you know, by having a meeting together to talk about what's the best time to do that during the week, but it can be very grounding and comforting to a partner to know that, oh, no matter what, above and beyond, we will have that time
that
together.
Time. Exactly.
Because she
love
might
that.
Be kind of floaty, you know, she may say, I don't know what I'm going to do, I'll let you know later. So her taking some responsibility
I like
in that,
that
too.
And then it's, it's not on the one person, it's like, this is the time. I like that very much. Great advice.
All right, so exciting news for next week. So there is a movie called Waking, and we are actually going to have the writer and the lead actor, Skylar Caleb, and the lead actress, Meg Sione, is going to be coming on the show. We're going to be talking to them about their movie, but also wanting our listeners to please chime in about what is a fantasy relationship versus a real relationship. Would you choose your fantasy person over your real person? And what does that look like? What is the people in our dreams? Are they real? Can they be real?
Right.
Is it fair to have a real person have to compete with that image? I mean, we just want to get into all of that stuff.
And so interesting. And you could see the trailer online.
Yes. Yes. So just go to Waking.
Yes.
And I think it was out in 2013. It was out on Hulu and Netflix and all things like that. And I'm going to watch it this week.
Really interesting trailer. It's really, I mean, it does. It brings up a lot of questions about reality versus fantasy. And, you know, do a lot of people hold on to fantasy more than they do reality? So, yeah, it's going to be a great show. I'm super, super excited.
Yeah, they were so generously willing to,
come on
the show.
Great.
So it'll be great. And also the lead actor, the lead character, is actually a psychologist.
Yes.
So it's going to be interesting that he wrote a character as a psychologist to be dealing with that dilemma.
Sure. Very cool.
So that's going to be super fun.
Yeah.
So in the meantime, we wish you all a wonderful week. And thank you for listening. And you can visit me at www.drdebraonline.com, drdebraonline.com. I've got books and lots of fun new things. And please follow my blogs and follow me on Twitter and all that kind of stuff. Whatever the heck you're supposed to say to people. just do those things.
But I like I said, visit me, like you're going to pop out of the screen. You know, click on me and I might show up. You know?
Never know. And you can visit Kelly at
www.kelly.com. K-E-L-L-I, Miller, M-I-L-L-E-R.com. Or you can find my book, Professor Kelly's Guide to Finding a Husband, on Amazon. So we will see you next week when we talk to the actors from Waking. And in the meantime, give us your emails.
Bye-bye.
Thanks.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.